The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Kia ora koutou, no mai, haere mai ki Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's food podcast. Each month we get together to eat and drink delicious things and chat with the buzziest people in New Zealand food. However, this month getting together is just not possible. We're all locked in our bubbles, desperately missing cafes, restaurants, bars and takeaways, but doing our bit to stop the spread of COVID-19. I'm your host, Simon Day, and always I'm joined by the Spinoff's food editor, Alice Neville. Kia ora, Alice.
Kia ora.
Hospitality tycoon, Sophie Gilmore.
Kia ora, Simon.
Hi, Sophie.
Tycoon and today, is outrageous.
Today, our guest is Al Keating, CEO of Coffee Supreme. Kia ora, Al.
Kia ora, the Spinoff.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we go any further, I'd like to acknowledge our wonderful sponsors because without them, we wouldn't be here. Freedom Farms makes all the Spinoff's food coverage, including Dietary Requirements, possible. And they believe that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how those animals have been raised. They're dedicated to providing you with the best pork, free-range and free-range eggs. And they're also dedicated to the Spinoff's unique coverage of the New Zealand food scene. So show your gratitude to them and buy their delicious products. And I wanted to quickly share a bacon story from lockdown. My neighbors are 25-year-old bogans who don't pay a lot of attention to the world around them. And on Good Friday, one of the boys went up to the supermarket for some lunch. He returned home and I could hear over the fence that he was furious and empty-handed. He yelled very loud, easy for my wife and I to hear, "Jacinda's decided to close the fucking supermarkets. It's just one more thing to add to the list of reasons I hate her. All I wanted to was to eat some bacon." And so I think it's a clear example of how powerful bacon is when that umami flavor can at least create one change, vote for change of government. So power to bacon.
Yeah, nice. I'm afraid that's Jesus' fault, though, mate.
I think technically it would be the Romans' fault for killing him on Good Friday.
Good point, yeah. Blame them.
So I don't think Jacinda had all that much to do with the death of the Son of God.
Also, no, should he be going to the supermarket just for bacon? I think we're being told that that's not the jam.
No, it's not the idea, no.
I'm having real trouble with the supermarket. I was going almost every day in the first week.
That is not okay, Simon.
I know, but I'm prone to forgetting things. I'm really prone to forgetting things. And that cultural change that was required was slow for me to respond to. Mm. Like, I'd still forget the fresh coriander and I'd have to go back the next day to get the coriander and I'd get some dishwashing liquid. I'd go get some dishwashing liquid and some coffee and then I'd forget the milk and I'd have to go, you know, so it was just this bad cycle of my natural personality, and it meant I was not locking down well. So I started doing things like taking a list and checking it twice, and we got there. I haven't been to the supermarket for 5 days.
Were you walking to the supermarket?
No, I was driving.
Oh, Annie's driving.
Oh, my God. Someone call that number, 105.
Is that all it is? 105. That's how you dial is a lot of people in.
I could have made that up, but I think that's it.
Friday bacon shoppers.
Yeah.
How is everyone, though? How is lockdown going? Are you okay?
I hate lockdown.
Do you?
But I'm okay. Yeah, yes. I hate it.
Why?
Because it sucks. You can't do anything. It's boring.
Tell us about the biggest pain of lockdown.
Oh, my God. Well, at the risk of sounding like a wanker, I really miss cafe coffee. I really, 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 really want a flat white.
Do you know what I find hilarious about that is that, A, you're not on your own, but I panic bought an espresso machine and I was really fucking aware of the privilege of the situation and I was really embarrassed as a result. But on the last day, in the last hour when we were allowed out, I went to Westfield 277, one of the worst places in the world. Then I went into Farmers, and a couple of my girlfriends on a WhatsApp group live on farms, and so they make coffee at home. So there's been quite a lot of sort of like the best machine for home sort of chat on there lately. Anyway, I was like, send me the machine, went to Farmers. It was, I think, $1,200, and I was like, that's a bit extreme. One of them I remembered said it was always on sale. So then I went upstairs to Noel Leeming. They wouldn't sell me the display one. I was almost like, just give me the machine. Anyway, he said no. So then the guy walks away, and I said, well, what are we going to do then? And he said, oh, there's one in Queen Street. Came back and said, I can put the sale through for you now, but you have to get to Queen Street in the next 15 minutes.
Oh, my God.
And so then I'm in the car, like, literally racing to Noel Leeming on Queen Street to buy an espresso machine. That's basically all I did on the last day. So,
how many times have you used it?
Oh, every single day, for sure. Is it? Right. I think it's the reason that I'm enjoying lockdown is that, you know, it's the rituals and the habits that we go without that make us start to feel crazy, and I'm not going without it.
But I just don't trust it would be as good because I've never had home espresso machine coffee that's as good as cafe stuff.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
How much skill, Al, is involved in making a coffee from the proper machine? Because I think baristas are one of those professions that are under-recognized for the skill that's involved.
Yes. It's a good question, and I guess I get asked this a bit, but I'm certainly not the most qualified to answer. although in saying that, I've definitely done my time on a machine and spent years on a machine and loved every minute of it. Yes, it is a skill that's underrated, and there are many, many ways to fuck it up. And I think that is probably the part that's kind of overlooked. You've got all of these ingredients, which are in themselves quite have a lot of variables, and you have to coordinate them all into one place. And so, yes, it is a lot of skill, and there's tons of variables that can change the outcome. So it's managing all of those moving parts.
And I don't feel like that should be that surprising to people. You know, the fact that you're saying that is and in such a way that people understand it is because people don't understand that coffee's a recipe. Like, they think it's this random thing that you mix with water and it's all good. It's like, of course not. You've got to get so many variables right to get it right. And, you know, things like adjusting the grind. I guess if I hadn't worked in hospitality, I wouldn't feel confident doing it at home. But sure. Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying.
And you see the barista standing behind this metal box and you're not really sure what they're doing. They might just be pressing a button and waiting for the juice to come out. And so I guess that's the perception often of the punter standing on the other side.
And that's people who will, you know, 30 seconds after ordering, despite seeing that the cafe is filled with people who are ahead of you, be like, where's my coffee?
Yep.
Yeah.
Alison, Al, what do your lockdown coffee rituals look like?
I just bought an AeroPress that arrived today because I was like, I just need to try something
losing
else.
It.
Yeah. But before that, I just had a Swiss Gold. I've spent a lot of money on ordering coffee shit online because I'm not spending it on buying coffee. Bought a Swiss Gold from the Supreme website. So it's like a drip filter that you don't have to put a paper filter in, which is good. Mm-hmm. And I grind my own my little grinder.
Mm-hmm. And you're gonna be like Rafael Nadal with one gigantic grinding arm?
Yeah, pretty much. But, and it's fine, and I know that filter is like what the coffee aficionado's like, but I just really miss a flat white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of people are saying that. You're not on your own.
I know.
I know. No,
I was just going to say, I've had a number of people tell me they just want to go out and buy a flat white.
Yeah. I miss maybe cafes as well.
This is what we need for people to understand how good baristas are at their job. Like, you can get a beer in a can and pour a glass of wine, but you just can't make a coffee like your local cafe does for you.
Oh, totally. Or bake a loaf of bread or, you know, make a decent croissant. They're things that are very skilled and we're missing them dearly. Yeah.
So what's your coffee ritual?
Well, my coffee routine is the same as it's been for a long, long time. I have a Mocha Master, which is like a traditional, quite a traditional drip coffee filter. And I have a scoop. And I don't use my scales, and I can do it with my eyes closed. In fact, my children can do it. It's very simple, and I make enough coffee for my wife and I to drink, have a few cups each, and that's my routine daily, several times a day.
How many times a day?
I probably have three or four coffees a day. That's about it, and I generally don't drink coffee after midday. I just feel like that's sort of coffee time is done. I know lots of people drink coffee in the afternoon. There's times that I would, but generally I don't.
One of my favorite memes of lockdown was a cup of coffee handing a relay baton to a glass of red wine.
Yep.
that's pretty much how I've worked. Although I'm happy to have a coffee at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, you're also, you have coffee as soon as you open your eyes as well. Yeah, for me
it goes to beer time. But if I have to work late, I'll have a coffee at like 4.
If I've need to sober up, I'll have a coffee.
Sometimes an after dinner coffee does the trick.
Yeah,
the red wine returning the baton to the coffee cup.
Oh, totally.
And Al, we've discussed how the lockdown has sort of affected our personal lives. How was it for the business, as you know, you saw us go into strongly suggested social distancing, then that 48-hour period from the Prime Minister's announcement of level 3 into level 4? What did that look like and feel like for a business that was suddenly going to lose its revenue stream?
Yeah, it was an interesting process. And I guess let's go back six to eight weeks, where we had begun planning for this.
Feels like such a long time ago.
Who had been tasked with the job of, I guess, watching this, making a plan, setting triggers, and communicating that to the entire company. There's about 110 of us around Australia, New Zealand, Japan. And so we felt like we were reasonably prepared, but it accelerated so quickly, even in that last 48 hours. So in the last week leading up to that, it felt sort of novel. People were washing their hands lots and making a joke about it. You would pass people in the room and do the dance around them so that you had 2 meters. All of those things were happening, but seemed quite trivial. And then bang, the lockdown came and we all went home and realized, as you say, our revenue just got turned off. So at Supreme, wholesale selling coffee to independent cafes has traditionally been about 80% of our business, and the other 20% comes from our other activities, being our own cafes, online, and some FMCG sales. And so we basically tanked overnight. There was a window where our online store remained open. I don't know if some of you watched this, but there was a bit of chaos as it was turned on and turned off again, and then turned on again and turned off again, while we, I guess, figured out for ourselves, are we safe to trade? Are we breaking the law? Is it the law? Is it just a strong request? You know, all of those things that the industry went through. And essentially then we got a very stern word, which was, please do not sell direct to customers. So
where did that
was
come
a really from? Heartbreaking moment. I was in Wellington at the time and I got the call and said, hey, we're going to have to turn this thing off. And it was pretty brutal because you really were turning off livelihoods, not just a roasting plant, you know.
So what was the downstream consequences of that? Because, I think about the staff that I know behind the machines of places like Custom and I know Soph, but obviously there's a lot of people who you don't directly employ who were affected by that decision.
Oh, yeah, massive. I mean, we're a huge community and, you know, you could trace it all the way back to farms where coffee is grown. It's going to have, and it is currently having, a huge knock-on effect where we've all been sent home and there's a certain amount of uncertainty. The government has been fantastic, so we have been able to assure our staff at least that there is a certain amount of income for the next period of time, even if it's not what they were used to. It's in a crisis, so most people have been really understanding, some voluntarily taking more of a hit, things like that. But it is a massive amount of uncertainty for us as an industry where there's going to be piles of green coffee sitting around the world that's spoiling. There are going to be amazing businesses that just won't seem to be able to come out of this. Lots of people, as you say, who are not directly employed by Supreme, but are friends of ours or suppliers or, you know, industry friends who it's really there's so many unknowns. And you sit in your little room. We're all sitting in our rooms. I can see you there. I said to somebody this morning who asked me how I was doing, I said, I feel like I'm a part of a game where I'm steering this thing through a storm, but I'm just doing it alone in a room. It's almost like a virtual situation where I'm getting numbers and I'm getting information and I'm talking to people and I'm doing these conversations, but I really don't know what's happening at the end of the street. I could be living in the Truman Show.
So are you guys going to get through it? Like if we are able to come out of lockdown next week, and then, I mean, who knows what that will mean for if cafes will be able to reopen or not. But, like, how tough is it?
For the industry, for Supreme, for hospitality?
For Supreme particularly. I know for the industry it's bad, but how are you, I mean, are you going to have to lay off staff, or is the wage subsidy going to kind of pull you through?
The wage subsidy will buy us time to look at what parts of the business we can salvage and what parts of the business we need to remodel or part ways with. So, yes, it's a really good question. We will be a smaller company after this because of the fact that many hospitality sites will go under. I've heard the number of 50% in New Zealand alone.
I think I've heard 50% of people are thinking about it, and one in five will definitely no longer be with us. And I think do you know what? This sounds like it's an unkind thing to say, but a lot of the time I think that when you go to council and apply to run a hospitality business and they don't even ask you one question, you start a business and you're running something that's pretty terrifying and it's pretty on the edge. And so in a way, I think that if I look back at our time at Bird, I mean, there are certainly times where if this happened, we wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes. And that's because we were trading so close to the line. And if you get yourself into a hole, it takes a long time to trade out of it. And so...
Yes.
I don't know. I almost feel like for the people that don't make it through this, that could be the better option for them than trying to trade out of this.
100%. Yep, I don't disagree. I think for many, I mean, the minister said really well the other day, if you went into this in your business was in a bit of a shambles, then you should expect to come out of it in a big shambles or not at all.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't change the broken hearts and the broken dreams. And the things that gets me, you know, is that people's life savings just go up in smoke. And it's so awful because they had this romantic idea about operating a hospitality business. But I'm sure across the whole economy, people are having the same conversation we are.
Oh, totally. And if you went into this and you were in pretty good shape, then you've probably got a good chance of treading water for this period of time, which is unknown. But with government help and any working capital you have tucked away, you probably have a chance of getting through it, even if you do look a little different on the other side. So for us, although we've lost a huge part of our revenue for a time, online has exploded.
Yeah, and I love that. That's happening to a lot of food guys.
Totally. So there's lots of us who have watched our online stores explode, and we're super grateful, and we've been overwhelmed with support and lovely messages from customers and fans and followers and all of those people, even you guys who are drinking Supreme. Thank you. It's been really amazing for the support, and that's going to, I guess, make us cash neutral for a little while, so that we're not going backwards and having to trade ourselves out of the hole that you talk about, Soph.
Yeah.
But again, and then there's FMCG, which has also been really good. And this is, you know, we supply probably 30 FMCG stores, supermarkets around New Zealand. And the decision to do that was an enormous one about 18 months ago, and was polarizing at Supreme, where half of the company thought, this is going to destroy us. We're going to go to the supermarkets. It's going to be on sale at Pack and Save, and nobody's going to want to touch Supreme ever again. The other half of the business said, if people who love Supreme are at Pack and Save, why would we not put ourselves within their reach? And so that was the big argument.
Very clear who was right now.
Yeah, I was right. No. So we went there, and it's going to be another really amazing bit of revenue that's going to help us get through this and will help us as a community be a part of rebuilding it into whatever it looks like next.
And I think for me it also presents an opportunity, like you say, even if it's going back to zero, we cannot escape that there's an element of starting again. And isn't the average person probably about a month behind in their own lives anyway? So even if it's just been catching up, it's like something good has to come out of it, and it's not going to be tomorrow. But I think that the trajectory, in a way, feels like an opportunity on a good day.
Massive opportunity. It's a huge opportunity. I just can't help but think this is, I mean, it's a couple of things. It's a chance to do some stuff that you're always a bit terrified of doing to your business. But it's also a chance to rethink what you really want to look like at the end, or to look at what success really is or means to your business. So,
and to yourself,
that's kind of where we're at. Yeah, and to yourself.
You know, everyone having all this family time. I think it's got so many benefits, and it's got so many challenges. But the thing about that is that we will emerge a bit clearer on what we're doing, and I think that makes decision-making more efficient as well.
Do you worry, though, about the effects that it's going to have on the cultural buy-in to cafes and restaurants? I read a story yesterday about how we probably won't go back to shaking hands in the way we used to after this pandemic. Are we going to still be squishing ourselves into cafes and restaurants and bars and clubs like we used to? And are cafes and restaurants viable if their capacity is cut by 50%?
I guess are you asking me?
I'm asking anyone.
I'll let somebody else answer.
I hate the thought of not being able to squish into cafes and bars and restaurants anymore. That's all I have to say. I don't know if where we might. Yeah, I guess I have to get used to it, but it's a depressing thought.
I think we're social creatures, and that we'll find, whether or not it's the same way, we'll find another way to get the feeling that we get from being together. And I think that it'll be a short-term thing. So I think that by the time there's a vaccine for coronavirus, everyone can just go back to being how they were. But of course, in the short term, people's habits, like I found in that last week of work, it was so weird going to meetings and people weren't shaking hands. And this dude sat like five chairs away from me at one. I was like, it makes you feel like a little bit leprosy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that there's such uncertainty, and the more information and the more clarity, the fact that we won't, you know, by the time we're out of this and everyone can be in gatherings again, there won't be a risk of community spread to you. And I think that potentially the older part, people in our community should consider protecting themselves more than they otherwise would for the longer term. But yeah, I plan to resume my normal behaviour once we're told that we're in the clear.
Maybe we all wash our hands a bit better and stay at home when we're a little bit sick, and that could actually be a really positive thing.
Oh, totally. I think those two things would be great habits to take out of this. I think as a culture that meets in hospitality spaces, we will return to that because it's part of our culture. If there are cultures that just simply eat in hospitality spaces, and they might change some of their patterns. But for Kiwis, Australians, you know, a lot of us, this is part of how we socialize. You know, say 600,000 people die every year of the flu, but you don't cross the street when you see someone blowing their nose into a tissue. So surely...
Yeah, yes. I mean, people like me that are almost the opposite of germophobes, I think I've almost been, like, arrogant about germs in the past. I just walk around presuming I won't get it. I've basically never had a sick day, and now when I think about it, I'm like, just if you're not feeling well, you should probably stay home, not because of you, but coronavirus is so outrageously contagious that it's such an interesting exercise in realising the responsibility you have when you're not well.
Yeah. Yep. Totally.
But seeing the flu, the number of flu cases drop because of this lockdown as well is really interesting. And I also think similarly shows that a lot of people should have been staying home.
And the Easter road toll.
Easter road toll and probably STDs.
Yeah.
Big time.
Well, you don't say STD anymore.
That's STI.
STI, thank you.
Yeah, they must be well done.
Alice, though, who saw someone on... I think it was Alice who saw someone on Tinder.
You know, it wasn't me, but it was, I haven't been on there, but it was Alex Casey, weirdly, who posted that in Slack. I don't know what she's doing on Tinder, but yeah, that guy who was like, I don't know about you guys, but this lockdown, you know, I hate it. Who wants to meet me in Grayland Park?
He's sort of been turned on by lockdown and was looking for someone to burst the bubble with him.
It's bad.
It's like teenagers again.
Yeah. Travel is going to be something that changes a lot, I think. I think we've just taken travel for granted, and now we're going to, you know, just flitting around the world is not so easy
anymore. Maybe we don't need to all be flying around the world in circles.
Exactly. I think it's,
and rushing, and maybe we need to support our domestic tourism a bit more. And I think that the interesting thing about on the food front is how much you miss the international spread of food that we eat regularly in New Zealand. Like, I remember when I was in Ireland after about 6 weeks, I was desperate for curry, desperate for Vietnamese, like searching out Japanese. And New Zealanders eat so internationally that it's been really interesting talking to people as they go, I would just kill for a curry right now, or, you know. So I've been trying all those things at home. I made butter chicken last week. I'm making laksa tonight. It's a good time.
Sophie, I want to know how you've managed to be replenished. Have your pantry replenished without going to the supermarket?
Oh, I only went out of the house for the first time in lockdown yesterday. So 3 weeks.
Out of the house? Oh, my God.
Sorry, apart from walking. But my first time in the car, I was like nervous my car battery wasn't going to start. We have had a delivery. I did a Mount Cook salmon delivery. So we had a couple of meals with salmon, and then we smoked the other half and had a couple more meals with that. And froze some. And then we've had the Clevedon Farmers Market delivering. So Curious Croppers, like huge box of, you know, 5 kilos of tomatoes. We did an initial shop when we came out here, and I ordered one of those meat packs from the Neat Meat Boys. It's called Hyper Meat, which was really good. We did a massive Batchwell kombucha order. I stocked up on Supreme Coffee before we left. We're actually, there's not anything that we are wanting for that we haven't been able to pull off. So
isn't that so cool, though?
It's like, cool,
And a great way to continue, I think. Love the supermarkets, and I love how important they've been to all our communities through this period. But the way that you can access the source through the internet, Sophie, is very, very cool.
Mm. Oh, it's been, but it's also really challenging. It's good because of the challenge on your own cooking as well. You know, it's making me really mindful of all the products that I'm consuming. And like, I got given this random cheese kit from my sister.
I've got one of those.
Have you? Like 2 years ago, and I haven't used it. And then I'm making,
I drag it around.
Yeah. And then when we ran out of all the other flours, I was like, I've still got pasta flour. So now I'm making ravioli, and I'm making my own ricotta to go with the bloody ravioli from the cheese kit. So, you know, I downloaded a piano playing app yesterday, and I haven't played since I did my like grade 3 exam when I was about 15. But it's interesting that the extra time and space in your brain, I think, is more the thing than time, because you can fill up time, but you know, it's been awesome.
So Alice has just jumped off to grab another beer, so I thought it's the perfect time to do a plug for the spin-off members. The media has never faced greater tumult, so this is your chance to invest in the spin-off and help us survive COVID-19 and thrive on the other side. The media has never been more important, but we've never been in bigger difficulty, so please support us today. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/members. Question for Al. How much plunger or filter coffee should we be buying at a time? Because I know it's a fresh product. You know, this goes off in the same way a tomato does.
Absolutely. You're right that coffee is very much a fresh product, like bread or tomatoes. It is food. It is starts green and like a split pea or a piece of rice, I guess.
And goes off over time.
It goes off over time. It does go off. It goes very bad. And then it's roasted. And in the roasting process, oils, it's caramelized essentially, and oils are released, and those oils go rancid. You can see the evidence of that when you go to a cafe that does not have great cleaning practice, and the hopper above their grinder is, the beans are stuck to the hopper. Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
You see it like at petrol station coffee machines at Macca's and stuff. So that's the result of the coffee going off. So you should buy enough, I think, for a week. We say it can keep for 4 weeks because we know that not everybody is in the habit of shopping weekly, probably our parents' generation more than us. But so, I have a weekly delivery at home. Cafes get delivered, generally speaking, would get a weekly delivery, maybe a second delivery for a top-up. And coffee is great from about 3 or 4 days from the time it was roasted, because it needs to settle down and degas. And then it's good in the cafe, we say, for sort of up to 10, 14 days from there.
Is it degas before it's in the bag, or is that why the bag's got the hole in it?
Yes, that's why the bag has the valve, to let it degas, because it starts degassing as soon as it's roasted. And then it does that for sort of 3 or 4 days. And that's why sometimes if the valve malfunctions, you get a big crazy pillow.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And once it's ground, you don't have much time, do you, before it starts to deteriorate?
No, grinding it sort of pops the bubbles. And so the degassing happens very, very quickly. And so it then goes stale because it has greater surface area and has more oxygen contacting that surface area. And it spoils quickly. So the killers of coffee are light and moisture and oxygen. And so those three things will speed up the deterioration process, which is why you want to keep it in a cool, dark place. But weekly's light, good. Sorry, Monday.
Light and oxygen are powerful things, eh? They'll bash anything up.
Totally, yeah.
Hey, Al, what what are you doing with your team while you're away from each other?
Oh, well, I have a very small team, and but then there's obviously there's sort of many teams at Supreme, but I meet with my team very regularly. I mean, we're normally talking daily, as probably all of you are with your teams. So we do this. We have regular weekly catch-ups that are about specific things, and then we talk on the phone or chat or whatever for other things. My team are based in one here in Auckland, one's in Wellington, and one's in Christchurch. So we've kind of gotten used to working apart.
Yeah, and do you think they're looking forward to coming back to work?
Don't know. Well,
I think it's going to be interesting to see what the momentum, you know, if we've lost momentum or if people feel refreshed and re-motivated to get back and serve people.
Look, I think there are different levels, and it's a really good point. Hearing lots of people and you as well talk about learning a new thing or doing this or making that, it's like, wow, I've never worked harder in these last few weeks. I feel like I'm living above the shop. I come in here and I work, but I still go and have lunch with my family. Then I come back and I work, and I work till six, maybe, you know, whatever. Then I go back inside and stop working. And so it's this really interesting dynamic. Other people in the business, they don't have anything to do. They're struggling for stuff to do. So they are making things and learning new things or whatever. And it's kind of this challenge where you look at them and they look at me and it's like, give me something to do. And I say, well, I don't know what you can do.
Go and find something to do yourself.
On the edge of your bed. I think
I've got a good one.
Yeah.
We've got the whole Fatima's team doing, Yale University made their most popular paper ever. It's called The Science of Wellbeing. It's kind of about, it's a psychology thing about happiness.
Yeah.
And I've got the whole Fatima's team doing that, and they seem to be enjoying it.
Right. And so that's a daily thing?
It's the lessons are about 2 hours long, and it's the whole course is only 18 hours of contact. Right. But yeah, in hospitality, it's like we're paying these guys to sit around. If there's nothing we can find for you to do that's going to better our businesses, then, I mean, I looked up charities to see if that we could sort of repatriate our team to them. There's not heaps that you can do from a computer for lots of the charities that are really busy at the moment. But yeah, that's been quite a good one. I mean, I think it's like forcing them to better themselves, and presumably we'll get some benefit from that as well.
Yeah. Well, I know that those that don't have like tangible work to do through this are meeting regularly and are finding other things to do, and they're actually jumping in and supporting some other people who are overwhelmed with work. There is a very small crew of people at Supreme who have an enormous workload as we wade through, I guess, the process and the paperwork of changing the shape of the business. And the finance team are working like around the clock to try and spread what little money we have across, you know, this area. So
the new business unit.
Yeah, totally. And your question, Simon, will people enjoy returning to work? Some will. And I think some will say, actually, I'll stay at home. I've been more productive here. I've had less distractions at the water cooler or people leaning in my doorway. I feel like I'm really focused and working with purpose at home, so let me do this. And I would say, sure.
Yeah, I think I'm going to find some sort of weird middle ground. There's been definite benefits to working from home and definite detriments as well. For some reason, when I'm under lockdown, you know, you're at home all the time, but it'll be 10 p.m. at night and I'll discover I haven't showered or somehow... Somehow Sophie still manages to be late and disorganized to a meeting that she's had. She has, you know, usually Sophie's out going to 16 other meetings through the morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, has to pull up into the driveway of Kind and get one of the spin-off staff to valet her car so she can rush into the podcast. But, you know, still 4:15 the hour when she was meant to arrive, managed to be late.
I had technical difficulties today, thank you, Simon. I've been performing impeccably on my timeliness over this period of time. But, you know, I actually was doing a little food photo shoot for Fetimans at home before this. So turns out you can get all sorts of things done at home.
Yeah, totally.
I've been working harder than I've ever worked at the spin-off in the last few weeks, that's for sure. Which I think a lot of, it seems like either, yeah, you're in two camps, you've either got nothing to do in, you know, life, of what, no matter what your job, or you've suddenly like fucking rushed off your feet.
Yeah.
Which is weird. I don't like, I'm finding it quite isolating being isolated, you know. I really wish I could be in the office, especially working on a big news story, you know. It's nice having your team around you and you can, you know,
and input and like throw ideas around. Yeah.
I think there are lots of valuable things that we should go back to and get together over, and then there are lots of parts of our work that are best just sitting alone and typing or
totally,
you know.
Alice, did you not think about going to jump into one of your siblings' bubbles?
Yes, I've thought about it. But I've decided that because I have so much work to do, I'm better off here with my... And I've got a dog now, which...
Do you?
Did you not know? Don't you follow me on Instagram? It's all I post about.
I must. No, you always post honest, other people's dogs.
We're going to be entirely honest. Alice did join a bubble and then jumped out again.
I told you not to reveal that.
What bubble did you join?
I joined my sister's bubble...
At the beginning.
But now I've come back home because I, you know, just got...
Lots of kids.
Missed my quiet.
Pull that eject, emergency eject button.
Honestly, it's so interesting because I have obviously a new baby, but she's 4 months old and there's only one of her, which means she sleeps quite a lot. And I cannot get my head around these people that are trapped inside with like... multiple children under five. Like, how would you think of enough activities in the day? You'd just be like, just sit down and watch TV. I don't care.
It's like living in a daycare centre.
Do you have children, Al?
I have three children. But
his kids are growing up.
Yeah, they're a bit older. So Mia's 14, Johnny's 12, and Edie's 8. So they are keeping themselves pretty well amused. We also
are they doing well?
They're actually doing really well. So Mia has gone back to school, and Johnny has another week off. But so Mia's gone back to school, lives in, back to her computer, and is attending class. And Johnny had been attending class as well, but is now on holiday. And my wife is a primary school teacher, so she is also back at school, sitting at the dining table, just through there somewhere. And so everybody's actually managing really well. Yes, I've heard a few shouts and interesting words coming from the next rooms, but generally they get on great. They've got routine. They do lots of walking and bike riding. We can walk to a beach, so we're super lucky. So that's been what we sort of spend our time doing together.
That's awesome. And I think... this is kind of a funny revelation to me, but because you're in this bubble with the same group of people, I felt as though you had to hang out with the people all the time. And yesterday I went for like my first solo walk and just listened to a podcast, and it just reminded me so much of my old life. I was like, we need to split up and do our own activities.
Oh, totally. I've been walking daily, sometimes, you know, for an hour and a half. And the people you bump into is so good. I'm getting my sort of extrovert social top-ups by just bumping into friends and neighbours around the neighbourhoods.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, actually. I'm interested to hear Alice say that she's struggling with it a bit, because I would have expected myself to struggle with the lack of... socializing. I'm like your absolute type A extrovert, and I get my energy from other people. And so I was like, what am I gonna do? There's just gonna be no energy anywhere. But
here's my theory. We talked about this earlier, hey?
So Al thinks that
not at all. Go.
So what's your theory that introverts struggle more with this and extroverts are okay with it, which would fit me because I guess I'm an introvert.
You are. Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So, Sophie, were you about to say you're an extrovert and you was terrified of this, but now you're actually finding it quite energising?
Ah, I absolutely love it.
And are you
I'm
also
so surprised.
It, Yeah, you're surprised by it. And are you feeling liberated by it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It feels to me as though it's what the doctor ordered and I never would have chosen it. Interesting.
Beautiful response, Soph. That was really cool to hear.
That was great.
That was a joke Sophie cut out online around this minute. How about a gag? But I felt the same way. What I've really loved is this opportunity to invest in my brand new boys. I've got 15-week-old twin boys.
Oh, wow.
And
awesome.
Not feel any pressure to have visitors, not feel any pressure to take them to the pub or, you know, show them off. I think there's a lot of pressure on new parents, especially via social media, to not just raise children, but to parade them around and take them places. And it can be really hectic, especially if there's two of them.
Totally.
And I've had 3 weeks to unconditionally invest in their development and be around them a lot more. Like, I'm being a part of each feed now.
When you say invest in their development, is there things I should be doing?
I'm teaching them how to count to five. They're learning all their body parts in te reo Māori. We're doing lots of neck strengthening and things
right.
like that.
Okay, cool.
So they're real life humans. They respond to and learn words, and there's lots you can do now, Soph.
They learn words. I think that maybe you're a bit blinded by your paternal love for your twins, Simon.
But no, absolutely. Their cognitive development starts now. Treat them like adults. I rap Slinky Malinky to them. Slinky Malinky was blacker than black. The stalking and looking adventurous cat. With bright yellow eyes and a wobbling wail and the kink at the end of his very long tail.
Two.
Yeah,
oh,
nice.
My God, Simon. That was wonderful.
Lucky was awesome. Boys. I actually thought about that I'm really happy for you and Millie having this time at home with your boys. I imagine that, you're only four weeks younger than Odette, I think, but we have had obviously half as much of the activity and overwhelm and change that you have because you've got two of them. So I thought actually this will be a really nice time for you to slow down and you and Millie to enjoy like having dinner together and, you know.
I think the boys have really relished having me around, Millie less so.
I love how much you're reading into what the boys, their vocabulary and their thoughts.
They've got their own podcast, so.
Yeah.
That was part of their coping mechanism. Like a million other people, they started a podcast. What have your food coping mechanisms been? I joined the focaccia squad.
Nice. Yeah. I've just been eating a lot.
Sourdough. I'm a basic bitch. I've been making sourdough.
So have I, but in my defence, I've always been making sourdough for years, so I haven't just jumped on the bandwagon.
So what are the categories? I've seen there's definitely a focaccia gang.
Yep.
There's a sourdough gang. There's a banana bread gang.
Ginger loaf is another one.
I've seen, was it an Annabelle Langbein recipe? It looked really good floating around the internet.
Those cinnamon scrolls have been popping off the last few days.
Someone was doing a loaf. Was it Annabelle Langbein? It was someone. Maybe it was Chelsea Winter that was yeast that did not require yeast.
It's her lockdown loaf.
Lockdown loaf, that's it.
Do you guys have access to flour?
Yes. I've never seen so many hot cross buns at home, and I made them as well, but you sort of realise why people don't usually bother because it's such a faff, isn't it?
I made sourdough ones and it wasn't that bad because you don't have to knead. So, but they weren't that good. Like, they were fine, but.
Mine were sourdough as well, but to be honest, they had nothing on the wild wheat ones or the daily bread ones.
I've been doing, because I live by myself, apart from Stanley, my dog, I've been wanting to cook. So I've been doing stuff that will last. Like, I made sauerkraut the other day and I made harissa the other day. A lot of bread.
It's crazy, the eating, though. Like, I have – my day starts with a coffee and a pre-breakfast, which at the moment is a ginger nut. And then I have a breakfast, and then I have like a breakfast dessert, probably some Whittaker's chocolate, mm-hmm. and then I'll have a morning tea, and then I'll have a after morning tea, which is usually something, or a pre-lunch. Today was mince on toast, and then I'll have like the spag bol or the tagliatelle al ragù di Bologna left over from last night.
Of course.
Yum.
Now I'm having a whiskey during a podcast and wondering, you know, can I sneak out to get another bit of toast? Probably I'd have it with the very delicious Coffee Supreme and maple peanut butter by Fix
Ooh,
and Fall.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
And then I'll have a pre-dinner, and then I'll have dinner, and then I'll have dessert. And I've never had dessert so regularly as in lockdown.
What
a lot of calories.
Yeah, what's for dessert?
At the moment, I've got the Little Island passion fruit coconut ice cream in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That's very good.
Man.
We've been doing things.
We're all kind of
clinging to routine in a way. And so you make your own rituals, don't you? Like, I'm not a morning tea or an afternoon tea eater normally, but... like, with my coffee, after my little Nike training club workout, it's now what I do every day at 11 o'clock, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you guys are all, I mean, I guess this is a food podcast, eh? So that sort of explains it. But, man, I feel like I've fallen behind. I feel like you missed a category, Si. You missed the category of also still just working.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think you're just working really hard now. I think that's like... you're making hay while the sun is not shining, and that's what you need to be doing right now.
Making hay while the sun's not shining, yes. Well, I'm definitely cutting the grass. I don't think I'm making hay yet. But yes, I know what you're saying. I haven't had time to do that, and I also have maybe sort of old school work ethic where I just wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. Even though I've taken a decent pay cut, you know, I could probably justify it, but I'm just got so much in front of me. But yeah. I'll tell you something that's changed that's been really amazing. We get HelloFresh delivered, and in the lockdown we thought, let's just go full Monty. So we used to get like three, I think, and now we get maybe four or five. I don't know.
Meals, five people.
Something like that. No, yes. Five meals, five people. Maybe that's the one. I'm not great with detail, but... my 12-year-old, who's always been quite drawn to the kitchen,
is cooking
every night.
Awesome.
All I do now is I just oversee him. He pops in here at about 5 and goes, "What do you reckon, Dad? Should we do the Japanese poke bowl?" I'm like, off he goes. That was a thumbs up. You can't hear it, but I was giving a thumbs up.
Then
I come out and he's kind of prepping and chopping and doing all of this. And he's really good, and he's starting to tweak the recipe, and he's added a bit of this and he's swapped that for that, or he's gone out, and, you know. So that's been one of the greatest things about lockdown, is that my 12-year-old son has discovered cooking regularly, not just as a novel thing.
Isn't that cool? Because, you know, read things. There's some things that I think have been quite moving throughout this time, like where the British people are clapping every evening at 7 o'clock for essential workers. I thought I watched a video of that, and then the New York Fire Department standing outside the hospital giving the real heroes of New York a clap. I was like, bah! But one of the things is, mm-hmm. you know, we are living through history and we'll remember this, and your son will remember that he learnt to cook during the coronavirus lockdown. I think it's making memories.
Totally. Yeah. I learnt to cook during isolation in 2020. You know, it's a good point.
You can tell him, Al, this was how my mum got me into cooking, that it's going to really help him meet a romantic partner in the future.
Okay.
My mum told me that if I wanted to meet girls, the best way to do it was to be good at cooking.
Right.
Ooh, so
that's how I started chopping up carrots and onions and shit in the kitchen as a 12-year-old. And, you know, it didn't really work, to be honest. But
you did okay with the ladies until you met Millie.
It really did help me lock down my wife, though. She loved my cooking.
you're a good cook. It's awesome.
Well, I give it to my mum too, because when we were growing up, when I was the same age as Johnny, we were given a night each, and she would say to us, "You tell me what you want to cook, and I'll get everything together and then help you after school to cook that meal." And so Thursday night was my night for cooking from maybe 13 something until I left home about 18. But for years, Thursday night was my night, and I learnt to cook all these meals because I'd say, "I want to do this," and she'd help me do it. So props to mum for that one, and it's so nice to see Johnny doing it now.
Cool. I think a lot of people will be learning to cook during this lockdown, because there must be so many people who just live on takeaways usually, who will not know what to do with themselves.
Yes, I heard somewhere that people are having to tolerate their partners or their housemates' food, you know, and cooking, their cooking skills must be tough out there for some.
It must be.
And yesterday when I was at the supermarket, I noticed that the empty shelves were often the ready-made meals, the things that you just mix or heat.
TV dinners.
Surprise me.
Yeah, like in the Asian food aisle, I was like looking for black vinegar and looking for all these ingredients, but the shelves all around me that were empty were just like laksa in a bowl or tom yum in a carton, you know? It's like everyone's just going...
People are giving up.
Yeah, yeah. Either that, yeah, they could just be giving up and they're fucking sick of it now.
Yeah.
Or, you know, these people don't know how to cook. And so what are they supposed to do? Got to get food somehow. And yeah.
At the end of our road is Countdown and a McDonald's, sort of almost on opposite corners. And I reckon as soon as lockdown lifts, the queue will shift from Countdown to McDonald's.
Definitely. Yeah, the McDonald's queue, I drove past it on the way out here on the last night,
yeah,
was there was traffic from the drive-thru. I was like, wow, I didn't realize.
Really? It was really crazy how many people went for a final Macca's run.
I know, the Last Supper.
I did KFC. I went and got a whole bunch of K-Fry, enough to have 3 days' worth in the fridge.
Nice.
I never go to KFC, and I was just like, that was my panic buy, was like a 24-pack of chicken.
Chicken.
Dude, that's great.
I still think your $1,500 coffee machine takes the cake. So
no, I got up. You didn't hear what's it called? The punchline. I got it for 50% off, Simon.
Nice.
50% off. I just had to hoon to Queen Street and like basically accost a salesperson there. But we're good.
But you made up for it in parking.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're coming up on the golden hour, and we don't like to go too far over that. I wanted to get some final tips from the team for lockdown cooking using, you know, if you get stuck and you don't want to go and brave the crowds at the supermarket, what's something that you can do with the pantry leftovers? I've been going to the frozen peas in a big way. And making pea pasta. I just parboil the peas, chuck them in the blender with a little bit of sweet and a little bit of sour, whatever you've got around, maybe some mustard and some lemon juice or some white wine vinegar and some cheese. Blend it all up, chuck it on some pasta with a little bit of the pasta water, and it is so delicious.
Leave some of the peas out whole so you get two different textures.
Very good tips. Always leave about a quarter of the peas whole and then dump them on top at the end.
And what sort of pasta?
I go something thick because it's quite a heavy sauce and you've got big peas to stick to it as well. So probably pappardelle.
Okay, nice.
I would just on that note like to shout out another isolation food trend, which is that bloody email recipe exchange. Has anyone else been getting lots of those?
I got done with that.
So you sent it to me, and I didn't forward it on. I'm sorry, I will.
So normally you wouldn't pay attention to those things, right, because you don't have time. But I did. I replied with my 10-minute flatbreads to all the people that I was supposed to send it to, and then I waited for ages, and I was like, this sucks. I'm not getting anything back. And then all of a sudden, this week, so 2 weeks later, I started getting recipes, and I made the most delicious broccoli pasta yesterday that was, like, kind of like what Simon just said, basically just pasta and broccoli with a bit of chili and anchovy. And
that's all you need, man.
It was unbelievable. So, yeah. And that was from Tess, who Ben from Almighty sent it to his sister, and it's all come around, so I'm stoked.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Pasta's like such a go-to, and I can see why pasta was reached for in the supermarkets, although it has baffled me that people have bought pasta and toilet paper because I've never seen those two things working together.
No.
Interesting.
But I would do pasta and just garlic, lots of garlic, thinly sliced, fried in tons of olive oil. And if you've got anything else kicking around in the back of the fridge, you know, that slides all the way to the back and gets a bit frosty, it's usually capers or some old olives. Throw those in. And that's about it. Just oil, pasta, garlic. Maybe some parsley from the garden. Got some nice herbs, so I'm always throwing those in. Those are
delicious.
My kind of go-tos.
Beautiful.
Alice,
are you going to say a pasta too?
Well, I was going to because I do eat a shitload of pasta, even at the best of times.
I know, and I love pasta, so I always like listening to your pasta recipe.
Yeah, on a similar theme, you could do, you know, couscous, one of those pantry staples that you've got, and whatever veggies you've got, I guess. And if you've got tahini, that lasts forever in your fridge, and harissa, lemon juice. I've run out of lemons a couple of times during this lockdown, though, which is quite grim. But preserved lemons, if you've got them, give you a lemony kick. You don't need to go to the supermarket.
Delicious. I love preserved lemon.
Yeah.
Got lemons in the neighbourhood, though? I know where all the fruit is in the neighbourhood. Just steal it. Steal it.
Go on one of your government approved walks.
Yeah.
Get a lemon.
Totally.
I think some of the things that you can also do is create. I read something this morning that said, think of every meal in pairs. So, like, if you're making curry, make extra rice so that you can make fried rice tomorrow. Or if you're making caramelized onions, then put them in a pizza tonight, but put them on a piece of sourdough tomorrow. Or, you know, like, just think about doing things in twos.
That's exactly how the pre-lunch thing works. So you make dinner and then the leftovers you use in a little bit of a remixed way. For something before you have lunch.
Cold and straight from the Tupperware, or do you reheat it and put it on a plate?
Depends.
Simon likes cold pizza and cold pasta and stuff.
Everything cold. I love cold.
I used to like cold pizza, and then I discovered frying pizza with extra cheese upside down.
Oh, yeah.
That changed my pizza leftover game forever.
A friend and I have for years had an idea that because food tastes so much better the second day, what if we opened a restaurant called Leftovers and you just served nothing cooked today?
That's genius. I love it.
That would be the strap line. I have to give that to Johnny Calder, who I used to work with.
I know Johnny.
And Alice is sitting, her background is good one, who, credit to Johnny Calder, that was his idea. Leftovers, nothing cooked fresh today.
I like that.
Yeah, go Johnny,
it's genius.
Yeah, Simon, what's your lockdown dish?
Already told you, girl, pea pasta.
Yeah, true. You started.
But speaking of leftovers, so I want to give a special shout out to Richard Duff. I worked with Richard Duff at Chibo, and he would eat clients' leftovers as long as there was more than 50% left.
Fair.
So he would literally take a half-eaten piece of steak and put it to the side and grab that later.
That's a massive temptation for staff working in a hospital, though, eh? Especially
I feel like you would do that, Simon, would you not?
No, we had tricks like as you collected the fries from the past, you'd bump them and five would fall out.
And good idea.
You'd grab those.
Yeah.
I think if I remember correctly, I'd do things like eat leftover side dishes because they'd been served out with a spoon and a fork. So
I remember
some asparagus and pecorino. I remember eating that.
You know when you'd like when we'd go on clear plates at the back of Chibo and there was that little shelf above the KP station. That's where all the side dishes always were.
When Richard left the restaurant as part of his leaving party, we collected all the leftovers for that night behind his back in a big serving dish, and then we garnished the big leftover meal with his other eating problem was he'd eat all the mints and the marshmallows from the coffee station.
Oh, yeah.
So we did a big final garnish of this leftover restaurant food with mints and marshmallows.
Beautiful.
It was cheap catering.
Mm. Yeah.
He ate it all.
That's awesome.
Well, it was awesome. Really nice to see you all. And Al, I really appreciate you coming on to talk to us. To all the listeners out there, support local businesses, especially local hospitality ones that are doing a really wonderful job of pivoting and still finding ways to bring you their amazing product. And as we come out of lockdown, be like Sophie, wash your hands well, but get back out there and go to cafes, restaurants and bars. And we look forward to seeing you all again in real life.
Yep.
Thank you. It was really nice to see you all. And always a pleasure. Best of luck with the next while.
Yeah, thank you. It was lovely to catch up with all of you.
Super. And thanks to Tina as well for recording in isolation.
And she was telling me,
without her,
telling me to stop clicking my pen.
Yeah.
It's no mean feat. And I'm sorry for the hold up at the start, team. Well done, everyone.
Well done, everyone. Thanks for joining us, Al.
Cool.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.